This is Judy Lee on the 19th of September 2020. I'm at Wendy Howell's home and I'm about to speak to Sheila Mackay, who has family connections with Malden. Sheena, would you like to tell us how you first realised there were family connected with Malden?
Okay. Well, my earliest memories, I suppose, of my Malden family were of my grandfather. I used to visit my grandmother and grandfather, and we used to visit the station to meet him when he'd finished work. And I can remember being small enough to peer over the fence to see my grandfather coming home from work, where he worked on the railway line, with his sandwiches in his ammunition bag and his World War II flying helmet to keep his ears warm. We used to stay with my aunt, who had a photograph of his mother, and I always knew that his mother had passed away very young. And as I was older, I started to look into the family more, and that was when I discovered the links with Malden.
This was at Wivenhoe you were staying at the time?
It was at Wivenhoe, yes. So that's where he lived for most of his married life.
So, tell me more about your grandfather then.
So, my grandfather was born in Malden. He was born in 1898 and he was the third of four children. His father worked at the ironworks in Malden as a core maker, I believe, and his mother did domestic duties both at home and outside of the house to make ends meet. The father was not a very well man, and as a consequence the mother used to have to work quite a lot because he wasn't always able to work, and as a result of that she passed away at a very young age. She was just 31 when she died, and that was in 1901, and she left her fairly unhealthy husband with four small children. The oldest would have been about seven and the youngest was 20 months old. That was their only daughter. So they were looked after by various people in the short term. His grandmother had a general store, which was at 193 High Street in Malden. She was unable to look after the children because she still had several children of her own. She was a widow in her 50s and was running the shop. So the children were farmed out really initially to a number of people so that someone could look after them. Now, my great-grandmother, his mother, who'd passed away before they married, she worked as a housemaid for a retired minister for the Congregational Church in Malden. They were all for Congregational Church attendees. Excuse me. And she had worked for this gentleman who, when the children passed, when the mother passed away, one of the ladies from the church knew that the person she'd worked for had been a missionary with a gentleman called George Muller, who had set up an orphanage in Bristol with the sole intent of proving the power of prayer. So they never asked for any money. If they had no bread, all of the children, and there were a great many of them, would pray until somebody brought them bread. So because of the connection, rather than the children going into a workhouse, it was agreed, there was lots of correspondence between the lady, whose name was Jessie Freeman, between her and the orphanage, and it was eventually agreed that they would take in my grandfather, who was three, and his sister, who was 20 months old, and the father would try to look after the two older boys, which he managed with some support for about a year. Sadly, he went on to pass away within about just over a year, I think. He had enteric fever, so the older boys were then sent to the orphanage as well. And they were raised there. It was probably quite an unusual way to be raised. It seems to have been very regimented. It was obviously quite staunchly religious, but they were fed well, they were given an education, and at the end of that they were all sent out to apprenticeships. So the boys had what were called in those days paupers apprenticeships, and the girls were sent as companions for elderly ladies. So the Sister Rose, excuse me, the Sister Rose went to be a companion for an elderly lady, and the three boys were all sent independently to be apprentices to tailors. My grandfather didn't like his apprenticeship job, apparently, so the tailor didn't want to keep him on, and he was sent back to Maldon, where he came to stay with his grandmother.
Do you want to pause there and have a sip of water?
So when he returned to Maldon, he stayed with his grandmother for a relatively short space of time. He became a French polisher by trade, and then unfortunately war was declared, and he went off to war as quite a young man. I believe he was only 17 when he signed up for the King's Shilling, as it were. He was sent off, he joined the Essex Regiment, he was sent off to Palestine, and he suffered shrapnel wounds to his back and his chest and his arm, and he was sent home. He was, as the story goes, because the children, once they'd been sent out from the orphanage, they had no contact with each other. They didn't know where the others had gone. So the story goes that my grandfather was one of the walking wounded, and as they were marching away from the battlefield, he met one of his brothers who was marching in. They'd stopped. It was pure chance the two groups had stopped together for a fag break, so I'm told, and he met his brother, who eventually came back and lived in Maldon as well. So he was returned as wounded. He was eventually medically discharged because his elbow was shattered, so it was set at 90 degrees. So he wasn't really much use as a soldier, because he couldn't fire a gun and lay on the ground. But when he came back to Maldon, he was in a Red Cross convalescent home, which I believe was near Fulbridge, at the bottom of Market Hill. I don't believe the building is there now, but he was there. My grandmother, who was living, I believe, in Brightlingsea at the time, had joined the Land Army, and she met my grandfather, who was still convalescing. He was still serving, so he was wearing his hospital blues, which was the uniform for wounded soldiers, and she said that his eyes were the same colour as his uniform, and she fell in love with his hospital blue eyes, and she referred to his hospital blue eyes until the day she died, which was probably 20 years after he did. So that was how he came back to Maldon.
Do you want to now say something about the lady who looked after the shop and what else you found out?
Yes.
Through your family?
So as I researched, I found that his mother Sarah was the oldest of 13 children, and her parents had, it was called a general store. I think we'd probably call it a junk shop now, but it was a general store, which was the shop at 193 High Street. So she had 13 children, of whom she lost four, which was quite common in those days. And her husband's grandfather also had a shop, which was at 199 High Street. I believe he was a baker. He was long before our time. He passed away in about 1880, but his daughter kept the shop and carried on for many years after that. So I've heard many stories about the old lady, because my eldest aunt could remember her, and they tell me that she was quite fierce, but that they loved her. They always thought that she had a toy and sweetie shop, and she wore long black dresses, because having been born in 1848, that's the sort of thing you would wear. And she used to go into the shop, and she would hide little treats for the children at the edge of her skirt, so they would, probably quite an undignified thing for a Victorian lady to do, but they would lift up the edge of her skirt to find a toy or a sweetie or something. So she was remembered quite fondly. I have also done some research into one of her sons, her oldest son, who was, it was one of those family stories that was a little bit different to the reality. So the story was that he was the Batman for the Prince of Wales. And there was a photograph, I'm told, that sat above the fireplace. It had pride of place, and he had a fabulously ornate uniform. Lots and lots of epaulettes and braiding, and this was his uniform. He only lived in Chelsea, and they lived in Malden, but they never went to see him because it was a long way. So they never knew, other than the stories he told. So I spent a lot of time researching and eventually found that he was, in fact, in the Corps of Commissionaires. And the epaulettes and the fancy braiding were because he worked as a doorman on grand apartments and hotels, which seemed much more likely because he suffered a head wound during the First World War, and he had a steel plate, so obviously that had quite a lot of effect on him. But I did then have to come back and tell the family that he hadn't been the Batman to the Prince of Wales. So I don't really know where you would like me to go next. From.
Sheena, can you tell us a bit more about the convalescent home that you mentioned in respect of your grandfather at the bottom of the Market Hill?
Yes, as I understand it, it was an old house, possibly had been a pub. It was quite a large building, and it sat near to the river. As you're going down Market Hill and leaving Malden, it would have been on the left-hand side. I believe it was quite an old building. I have seen a photograph a very long time ago. And as I understand it, it was on the left-hand side just before you crossed the river, although it's possible that it was the other side. I believe it stood for quite some time, but unfortunately it has gone now.
Do you recall how many stories it had?
It was just a two-storey building. I think from memory it was probably, I'd say it was probably sort of 18th century built. I believe it had quite a high roof, but it was just a two-storey building. But it was quite long. Now, whether that was originally more than one place or whether it had been, as I say, it could have been a pub or something of those lines, I don't know.
Thank you. Don't pause on that. Sheena, you've mentioned some family names to me, Minard and Canham. Can you expand on who they were in your family?
Yes. So the Canham name was from my great-grandmother, Sarah, who is the lady who passed away very young. She was a Canham, as were her 12 siblings. There were some relatives who stayed in Malden. I believe there were a couple of people who continued with the Canham family name. And one of the gentlemen was her brother Charles. And I believe that one of his descendants, Eileen Canham, still resided in Malden. The other gentleman, I don't believe, had any children. So that was the Canham name. We don't know where it came from. Her grandfather was a Samuel Canham. He came into Malden, he married her grandmother, and at some point he left Malden. We don't know where he came from, we don't know where he went. I've never found any trace of a birth, a burial, or anything else for him. He was recorded as a carpenter, and there were several other Canhams in Malden at the time. I'm talking about 1830s, 1840s. They were all carpenters, so I believe there was a family link. I don't know what it was. It has been suggested they may have been ship's carpenters, so it may be that he came into Malden on one of the boats and stayed and departed 10 years later. We really don't know. So that's the Canham link. So Minard link is Sarah, again, the lady who passed away young. Her husband, who also passed away young, he was a Minard. He was Henry Minard. He was one of a large family, and I believe the Minard family have been in and around the area for many, many generations. particularly around Langford and can't think of the other place. Somewhere else near Langford, which Alting, sorry, that's where. Alting. So I believe they were they lived around that area as well. But they've certainly I've traced the Maynard name in Maldon back to about 1740. So Henry was, as I say, one of a large family of Maynards, and he married Sarah, and that's where my grandfather got his name. So, and I believe there are still Maynard family members in and around Maldon now.
Can you tell me a little bit more about how your grandfather reacted to his mother dying and what happened to him after that?
Yes, so he was only three, and I'm told that he was very upset, understandably, that he'd lost his mummy and he didn't really understand what was going on. And they couldn't stop him crying. He was, I suppose, probably hysterical. So by way of stopping him crying, his grandmother took down his trousers and stuck his bare bottom in a water butt of cold water, and that shock stopped him from crying.
And which, this was the lady who ran the shop at 1993,
yes,
which is now the Maldon Tandoori.
It is, yes, yeah. As I understand it, it's mm-hmm. it's now part of the Maldon Tandoori building. Yes, so she was the mother of the mummy who just passed away, and I suppose she had to pick up the children and deal with them. So
then he went to Bristol after the lady helped from the Congregational Church.
Yes. So he and his sister Rose there was a time arranged. I've seen copies of the correspondence between Miss Jessie Freeman and the orphanage. So there was a time arranged, and because we didn't have telephones to check these things, and James and Rose were labelled up. They were put on a train at Maldon with their few possessions that they needed to take with them, and it was arranged that they would be collected at Bristol train station at the other end.
I believe there was some paperwork that had to be filled out first.
Yes, they had to provide evidence that the children were healthy. They had to provide evidence that the children were continent day and night, which for a 20-month-old little girl was probably quite a big ask, but she seems to have been. And they had to provide evidence that all of the children were born in wedlock and that the eldest was conceived in wedlock, so the parents' marriage certificate had to be sent as well. I dread to think what would have happened if they couldn't have proved that the oldest boy was conceived in wedlock, because I know that Sarah was born within about 3 weeks of her parents being married. They were married in Stowmarie's, and they were married in a barn which was solemnised for marriages while they were repairing the church roof, and looking at those dates, they probably didn't have time to wait for the roof to be repaired. So so they had to provide a lot of information, because the gentleman who set up the orphanage was very, very religious.
And the orphanage was well known in Bristol.
Yes, so they were the Muller homes. The gentleman was George Muller, and the children were... It was a very large place. There were five homes. The children were divided up into boys, girls and infants. So the children weren't kept together once they arrived, because Rose, I believe, was still an infant. So she went into one house, and James, my grandfather, went into a different one. They were quite lucky compared to the workhouse, which would have been their only realistic alternative. The children were well fed. They were well clothed. They had a uniform, and they were well known as a sort of curiosity, I suppose, in Bristol. And twice a year, the children, the whole orphanage, the children were marched through the streets in their uniforms.
What were the uniforms like?
So the little boys wore a blue suit. It was very smart. Quite old-fashioned by the time they were wearing them. And they had a little peaked cap. I suppose if you think David Copperfield, yes, you wouldn't be far off. And the girls all had dresses. They had to be modest because of the religious aspect. So they had longish dresses, and they had a bonnet-like bow peep, which, if you think that they were there until 1913, 1915, something like that, was very old-fashioned. But they were all, as I say, they were all dressed well. The girls were taught needlework, and I think the older girls sewed the uniforms as well for the children, so it was all quite industrious. So they were all dressed in their uniforms, and they were crocodile paired, and they were marched through from the orphanage to Ashley Downs, where they had the picnic. It was good for their constitution, and all of the people would come out and line the streets to see this sight of they were known as the Muller children, the boys and girls, and they were, say, so quite a well-known phenomenon, I suppose, within Bristol.
Thank you. Can you tell us a little bit more about the lady who ran the shop? And
yes, so I think, as I say, my oldest aunt, who would have been her great-granddaughter, has memories of visiting her at the shop. She always wore a long black dress. I have photographs of her with the black dress, which you can see. But she was described as being fierce but kind. They all loved her, but they treated her with quite a lot of respect, I think. And my aunt could remember going to the shop, and Granny Canham, as she was always known, would hide little bits and pieces just under the edge of the hem of her black dress. So when the children went in, they would find a sweetie or a little toy or something that was hidden under her dress. So that was a memory that was shared. And despite the fact that she was quite a fierce lady, those that remembered her always remembered her affectionately, I think.
Did she run the shop on her own, or did she help out?
She did. So the shop originally was run by her husband while she was rearing 13 children, but her husband passed away in 1900, and she took the shop on single-handedly from that point in time. So she would have been, she was born in 1848, so she would have been, you know, getting on in years for that time. We think today of people being in their 50s as being quite young, but if you've worked hard and you've had 13 children, being in your 50s, you probably didn't feel as young in those days as you do now. But she did go on to be 85.
And do you know how long she ran the shop for?
As far as I know, she was in the shop until she died.
Good gracious.
So, and that was, she certainly was still living there. I think she may have had a little bit of help by then. Some of her daughters may have helped. But as far as I understand it, she was still in the shop working until the day she died. I think she just carried on working. There was no such thing as a retirement age for that generation, was there?
No. Well, thank you.